This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, something's wrong with Sakia. I'm sure it's nothing. Hey everyone, and welcome to Hyperspace Broadcasts, a podcast where we watch a program broadcast on Toonami and try to determine if it's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about Tenshi in Tokyo, episodes 14 through 26, The End of Tenshi in Tokyo. So, in apropos of some of our discussion last week, I wanted to brainstorm a new name for the harem genre, because the name makes me uncomfortable. I know it makes you a little bit uncomfortable too.
It's just a creepy name for
Isn't
quite the genre in this case.
Yeah, in this case anyway. So let's do that. Do you have any ideas for like a better version of this genre?
Girl squad.
Okay, great. Yeah, girl squad. Girl squad with a guy.
The hen house.
Yeah, that. Let's
Rooster
not go with
the
that
hen
one.
House.
Jesus, this is all right.
The real Rooster in the Hen House anime. Gender ratio anime.
Where clearly, this is not my forte. Is coming up with names for things. That's like the weirdly the thing that I struggle most with.
I'm on the case.
Yeah. And you're giving us some great stuff. Let's get one more before we move into the synopsis. Yeah, come on, make it good.
Girlfriends. Friends. It's just friends.
All right, just like friends. The friends genre. You know what? I'm okay with friends being a genre, actually. Let's go with that.
Yeah, friends.
So
that's pretty broad.
Yeah, right. So for this entry in the friends subgenre of anime, there is a lot going on in the last half of Tenshi in Tokyo. To begin with, everything's going pretty normal until Tenshi tells Washu to cut the tunnel between his Tokyo apartment bedroom and the Masaki household in Okayama, which naturally causes Aika to lose her mind. And Ryoko is surprisingly calm because, due to her date with Tenshi, she thinks that they're, like, okay, and she trusts him.
Yeah, they're like an item now. I love, and they freak out, even though it's like, yeah, please cut off this extremely invasive tunnel into my bed.
Because of this, everyone decides that they're going to visit Tokyo via bullet train. In order to pay for this, they just straight up steal money from Nobuyuki, Tenshi's dad.
Tenshi's awkward, very dad-like dad.
Yeah, right. Who went from perv dad in previous versions of this show to just this guy who's constantly just the butt of every joke and
constantly trying to escape the house, it seems.
Yeah, right. Or get back into his house. At any rate, they literally hog tie him and tear the house apart looking for this money, eventually find it, and use it to pay for a trip to Tokyo. Their arrival in Tokyo happens to coincide with a school festival at Tenshi's school, where he's helping Sakuya set up a stand for crepes. And basically, they just ruin the carnival. Washu fucks with the science experiment. Aika destroys a haunted house. There's a bit where Ryooki destroys a building because she transforms into a mech in order to get away from a bunch of crazy science students. Essentially, everything's wrecked, and Tenshi actually just flips out and tells everyone to just go away and leave him alone, which... something that has never happened in this show before, somehow.
Yeah, even though, yeah, somehow. There's plenty of opportunities where it probably should have happened.
Yeah, right, right.
In this case, it was like, fucking enough is enough.
Tenchi and Sakia later kiss. Ryoko actually did come to Tokyo in order to visit and catches them kissing. So she's pissed off and is just kind of bumming around Tokyo angry, where she runs into Hatsuma, the glasses guy with blonde hair, who convinces her to basically become a space pirate again. Meanwhile, Kioni and Mihoshi are promoted, and they're sent to a precinct on Pluto, so they're also leaving. And essentially, the remainder of this arc is a bunch of kind of mini arcs that overlap, because all of the characters are separated by Tenchi telling them all to get lost. So we have Ryoko and Hatsuma becoming notorious space pirates. We've got Kioni and Mihoshi trying to capture Ryoko by infiltrating her pirate clan, or whatever you want to call it. Washu just locks herself in her lab and doesn't come out even for food. And Sasami starts hanging out with Yugi, who invites Sasami to come live with her. Ayaka, meanwhile, is having nightmares about everyone being separated. And so she's concerned with trying to get everyone back together, but it's not really working out. No one knows where Ryoko even is. And then when she goes to visit Mihoshi and Kione, basically Kione just says, you know, I'm a police officer now. No one can even know about any of that because I was friends with a notorious space pirate. That'll destroy my career.
And she's like super serious and way more career oriented, or at least a little more career oriented in space. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. I was just weird on Earth.
Yeah, right. Basically, there was something wrong with me there. Also, eventually, Ayaka finds out that Sasami has been hanging out with Yugi. And so she starts fortifying the Misaki household in order to keep Yugi from kidnapping Sasami. Tenchi, meanwhile, is dating Sakuya, and things are going pretty well, except for the fact that he starts asking her a bunch of questions about her past, and she realizes that she has no memories that precede her encounter with Tenchi, which is...
Just crazy.
You might think, pretty disturbing. Meanwhile, Yugi is upset because she can't understand Sakuya's feelings for Tenchi, and Washu determines that Sakuya is just a projection of Yugi. Yugi destroys Sakuya's crystal in her little crystal constellation, and nobody except Tenchi and company remembers that Sakuya even existed. In other words, this means Tenchi's friends don't.
Yeah, she has like a Back to the Future moment where she fades entirely from the photograph of her and Tenchi, leaving Tenchi just awkwardly posing with his hand around nobody.
Yeah, which is excellent.
It's really good. I don't really understand what happens here, too, because soon after that, she's back. Because,
yeah,
like,
right.
Encounters
she comes
her
back
again.
To
I
the photo.
She was, like, So no, everyone's like, oh, who is Sakuya? What are you talking about, dude? And then he calls her and actually gets a hold of her, and then they hang out, and then she's back, and she's back in the photo.
Yeah,
and
right.
Remember
and
her again.
I don't know what. Yeah, that's one of the things in this that I was kind of weirded out by, that for some reason she disappears but then reappears. I think the idea is that she still appears to Tenchi and like his, you know, the women. But not to normal people, I guess. At any rate, Washu does some research. It turns out the reason she's been locked up for so long is because she's been running tests on Yugi, basically. And she determines that Yugi is Jiraiyan. So Ayaka discovers the Yugi backstory, which is that she was a mutant created by the Jiraiya royal family ages and ages ago, who was super powerful and super destructive, and they couldn't control her, so they imprisoned her and then shot her into space, where she eventually landed on Earth.
In what is a genuinely chilling scene that I really liked, that whole sequence was really well done.
Yeah, it is. That whole scene
where she's
is excellent.
Just taking over the planet with these giant monsters that she's just projections that she's created with her powers. And then you have this like Dryan goddess figure kind of just seals her away in this creepy kind of just like full of these like creeping vine tentacles that like grab around her and pull her into this sarcophagus that slowly starts closing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot creepier than say Mumra awkwardly backing into his tomb.
Yeah, a little bit because she's like Yugi screaming,
and crying.
Yeah, and
she's
terrified.
Like a 6-year-old. Yeah, and yeah, so it's like a pretty crazy dark backstory there.
Right. So also Washuin Katsuhito, who's Tenshi's grandfather, if you don't remember. Visit Tenshi, and they tell him that the Misaki family are guardians of Earth, and that Yugi intentionally split everybody up in order to basically weaken Tenshi, because he's
right.
The current guardian.
And the guardian, like, gains the powers from the crystals, like, the crystals represent Earth's powers, and all the crystals were given to all the women, so they are all split up to split up the power. And leave Earth vulnerable, I guess.
Yeah, and what I love about this, among other things, is that there's a point where Washu just directly gives Tenshi shit for splitting everybody up. At this point, Yugi destroys Sakuya. Like, straight up, she's gone now.
I thought she, like, kidnapped her more.
I guess. Either way, I mean, I got the impression, since she's just a projection, that she just kind of, like, willed her out of existence or something. But at any rate, Sakuya's gone, and Tenshi goes to confront Yugi. He does this alone, however, because, again, everyone's split up, so he can't really get Ryoko, for example. She's halfway across the galaxy. While this is happening, you have Yugi's three henchmen engaging in fights with different women. You have Hatsuma and Ryoko fighting, where Hatsuma refers to her first as a delicate space babe, and then, which is not the word I'd use to describe that character.
Yeah, really, really great.
Delicate is a fantastic word to describe the Ryoko. Like badass, crazy person. And he also transforms into a crazy monster, which you dubbed Hulksuma, which I think is a great portmanteau. Suguru ends up fighting Kyone and Mihoshi. Meanwhile, Mitori kidnaps Sasami from Ayaka. So Yugi has Sasami imprisoned, and Tenshi tries to fight her, but he doesn't have the sword or anything because he doesn't have the crystals. So she traps him in a dream with Sakuya. And basically, there's the ultimatum of, you can break out of this dream, but if you do, Sakuya's gone forever. Or you can just stay in the dream and not defeat me, and I'll just carry out my plan.
I thought that was pretty cool, too. The just kind of a brutal ultimatum there. And eventually, it's like Tenshi actually confesses his love to Sakuya in there, and it's like, I'm sorry, I fucking took so long trying to figure things out. And then, like, and spends time with her, and then she's just like, all right, I gotta do this. Sakuya is the one who, like, chooses to sacrifice herself and break the dream open to Yugi's surprise.
Yeah, right. And then Tenshi, who, you know, is heartbroken by Sakuya disappearing forever, essentially what this does is it summons the rest of the cast to his location. Like,
it's a plot teleporting.
Yeah, it's a very convenient Ryoko's halfway across the galaxy, but we need her in this room. So
everyone's
she'll just
gems
be there.
Start lighting up. Yeah. And the gem magic brings them all together, I guess.
Yeah, right. Like it's Sailor Moon or something. Even
hey,
Sailor Moon
doesn't
pull that shit.
Yeah, doesn't that mean Yugi's plan was worthless? If one gem can just summon all of them to the same location?
Yeah, I guess it does.
Well, you have to try, I guess.
Yeah, she couldn't have known that. I mean,
yeah, right.
You know, whatever. So everyone being summoned to him also breaks Sasami out of her crystal prison, and Sasami and Yugi have this brief talk where Yugi's trying to convince Sasami to join her in this world that she's creating just for the two of them, because Sasami is the only person who has ever called her a friend. Sasami refuses, of course, because she's good-hearted. And Yugi freaks out and blows them all away. And so Tenshi has to run this very long way in order to get to Yugi and stop her. Meanwhile, Yugi's creating all these crystal monsters in order to impede his progress, who Ryoko, Ayaka, and Kiyone and Mihoshi are taking out in order to cover him.
Oh, and you forget that Tenshi, all the crystals come together, so Tenshi gets the magic, you know, sword Tenshi.
Yep.
Or sword of heaven and earth. Whatever. He gets that, but the design in this show of the sword is pretty dumb. I think we can both agree.
No, it's very over-designed. Yeah.
They threw everything at the wall, and they're like, sure, it all sticks. Fine. It's a huge sword. It's unwieldy. It's weird. It's got, like, some random big crystal lights on
it. Yeah, it's got some random glowing spots. I mean, it's fine, but it's not nearly as cool as the fairly basic lightsaber that he had in previous shows.
Yeah, the, like, runic lightsaber is actually really cool looking. This is...
Yeah, it's kind of stupid looking. So Tenshi runs to Yugi. Yugi is begging him not to put her away again. And Tenshi just slaps her and tells her that she's not alone. Because if she wants, she can just come live with the Misakis.
Yeah, and then he hugs her.
Yep.
A slap and a hug.
Yeah, a slap and a hug, the classic combination. The bright Noah, really.
Yeah.
And that's the resolution, essentially. Yeah. She accepts. She's basically just a kid, and all she wanted was not to be alone. So saying, you don't have to be alone, you can come with us, is giving her what she wants.
Yeah.
And so the end of the show is essentially they put her in this, like, stasis in the cave where Ryoko was in Tenshi Muyo and Washu was in Tenshi Universe, if you remember those shows.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, everything's pretty much back to normal. Ryoko is hanging out with Tenshi and tells him that she's an adult and doesn't mind that he had a fling with Sakuya before immediately saying, like, that's a lie.
Yeah, I was lying. He's like, I'm glad you can be mature about it. Actually, I was lying.
Which is great. And then Washu and everyone else interrupts her moment with Tenshi. So the last thing we see in the show is Ryooki mugging for the camera for like a minute.
That's great.
Of just Ryooki staring at the camera, being cute and meowing.
Buy your Ryooki dolls now.
And then we cut to black, and that's the series. Great way to end it. I want every series to end. Like, imagine if Dragon Ball Z ended with just, you know,
Karin.
No, like Icarus. Just,
oh god,
like flying down and just mugging for a solid minute instead of anything.
They can only get away with that because it's Ryooki.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure Pokemon's done that with Pikachu.
Oh yeah, certainly. I would not be surprised if that's how Pokemon the first movie ended.
Pokemon movie. yeah, come on. Like,
so,
of course.
That's Tenshi Universe. It actually ends.
No, it's not. Nope.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's Tenshi in Tokyo.
Yeah,
let me
back up. That's Tenshi in Tokyo.
So, interspersed with all of that plot, there are several episodes, and many of which have like just stupid gags and non sequitur plots and just like unrelated shit to
that. Don't get me wrong with that pretty in-depth plot description. The show does not let up on the gags. The gags are here to stay.
The show is primarily wacky with a little drama on the side.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's like a nice meal of wackiness.
Yeah. Wacky with a little drama. It's a real souffle.
Yeah, it's my favorite lunch.
Speaking of things you consume, what was your favorite episode of this blog?
Yeah, let's get into our zeniths and nadirs. My zenith was episode 20, Old Friends, and this is the episode where Kiyone and Mihoshi try to infiltrate Ryoko's pirate gang quite unsuccessfully because Ryoko immediately realizes who they are, literally seconds after they sign up, she realizes who they are, but puts them through a bunch of torment because it's funny.
And watch, this is a great gag episode. I mean, watching them try and maintain undercover, especially Kiyone, because Mihoshi's being, of course, a fucking idiot. Like, you know, she's... they're trying to stay undercover, and she's like, hey, this is my galaxy police dance.
That's
check
my
it
favorite
out.
That's my favorite joke in the whole episode, that she does that. Every pirate around her is just laughing and like eating it up, and then Kiyone rushes in and is like, what are you doing, you idiot? You're gonna give us away. We're trying to infiltrate these morons. And then everyone looks at her, and she just says, party, and they're all like, yeah, and continue partying, which happens repeatedly. That
pretty great.
She gets their attention and then says something along those lines.
I feel like that's a thing you could get away with at most college parties too. You like say something really fucked up or insulting and you're like, party.
No, I agree. I feel like I may have employed that strategy at one point in my life. Who wants a beer? But the reason I like this episode a lot is that actually a pretty like decent chunk of it is Ryoko and Kiyone and Mihoshi hanging out. It turns out that Ryoko's hideout has a perfect replica of the Misaki living room just in a cave that Ryoko really hangs out in. So they're just hanging out in this living room, like reminiscing about old times. And I really liked it because it felt like, you know, really good friends catching up after a long absence, or like siblings even catching up after a long absence. But I really like that because it gives the indication that isn't given a ton in the other Tenchi series, that part of the reason that these characters stick together isn't just because they like Tenchi, but because they like each other a lot too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like that's nice that... I like that interpretation of why this unit sticks together.
I love a little good hangout scene too between different characters, especially like outside of the main character being, you know, Tenchi, and having, they're just like hanging out playing cards, and that's where you find out that like Ryoko's like, yeah, no, I knew you guys, I knew it was you guys literally the second you signed up.
The other thing that I really enjoy about this episode, or more just a dig on Tenchi universe, is that this episode and the whole arc with Ryoko being a space pirate is about 100 times more interesting than most of Tenchi Universe, the show that half of it took place in space. Like, it's called Tenchi Universe, and it has less interesting sci-fi stuff than Tenchi in Tokyo.
Yeah, Tenchi Universe was fucking boring.
Yeah, like, no, and, fuck that show.
And the whole universal aspect of it is like, one time they went to like a space diner, and this ugly ass kid stole their ship. Like that's about as sci-fi as they fucking got.
Yeah, it's a lot of really mundane science fiction. But
besides that, it was like we landed on planets that had like dry relics, you know, just like on Earth.
Right. But enough shitting on Tenchi Universe for now. What was your favorite episode, Peter?
My favorite episode was episode 14, Tokyo or Bust. This is basically kind of a road trip episode, which I really liked. I kind of wished it would be more characters hanging out in a van, getting into hijinks, like trying to make it to Tokyo.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Instead, it turns out to be Ayaka forcing Sasami to hitchhike with her to Tokyo from Okayama, which is a pretty long distance. You know, it's like going through down through all of California, kind of.
Yeah, no, it's a long trip
judging
to hitchhike.
Judging literally only by the map they showed in the show.
Right.
Yugi wants to help them, like, just to separate the group more, so she sends Suguru, and Suguru makes these, like, monsters. Doesn't matter. Ayaka and Sasami meet Masayo, who's, like, this badass biker woman. And she reveals that she's, like, been searching for her long-lost love, the only man who could ever outpace her, Isao. And so it's like, okay, this is, like, all of a sudden a biker anime.
including a bit where, as she's driving, it cuts to these close-ups of just, like, black-visored biker helmets where the character announces, like, oh, I'm Lightning Joe, the fastest ever. And then
no one could ever beat me. And then she, yeah, just
then she blasts
him.
Past him. And then they just do it again immediately.
Yeah, it's great. Ayaka eventually, like, just relates to her plight and agrees to help track down Isao. And it's revealed that Isao is not actually a biker, but just a really fast, awkward-looking runner
yeah.
who is faster than anyone on a motorcycle. And so they, like, race really fast to try and catch up with him just so she can, like, profess her love.
Right, and then Ayaka and Sasami realize that they're weighing her down, so they jump out of the sidecar,
yeah,
and she, like, launches into the air next to Isao. And then it turns out that they're a twin-tailed comet.
Yeah, yeah. A comet was briefly mentioned before, and it's like, yeah, those two are actually the comet.
The comet, which...
What?
All right, whatever. Like,
we made the comet into a monster, and they were...
just people.
A biker woman and a very fast-running man.
And they were perfectly nice. Like, Masayo is pretty cool. There's
now, my favorite bit about this episode... is the ending, because, like, after all that shit, when they jump off, they realize they've, like, overshot Tokyo and are now, like, probably a whole other hour or two away.
Yeah, yeah, no, they, like, overshot it by the distance between Okayama and Tokyo. They really
and so
fucked up.
It cuts to night, and they just make it to Tenchi's place, and they are fucking dead tired. And they're so tired that they just... Tenchi opens the door, is like, oh, hey, guys, how you doing? Oh, geez. And they just, like, ignore him and walk straight for the bed to go to sleep. And, of course, they get into his futon and fall asleep and fall through the portal in his futon back into Okayama, essentially rendering their entire trip worthless.
Right. And then they're
without
just
them even
sleeping.
Knowing.
Yeah, just sleeping on the floor in Okayama, where Ryoko comes down and puts a blanket on both of them, which is another thing, like another
nice
indication
touch.
That these characters actually like each other.
But it's just like a classic, just like kind of gag episode through and
through. Yeah, right. That was certainly an episode where, you know, immediately after recording our last Tenchi Universe, Jesus, why do I keep saying Tenchi Universe? Our last Tenchi in Tokyo episode, you know, we watched that one and it was like, oh yeah, this is still going to be good.
Yeah.
It's not going to suddenly go downhill from here.
Although, speaking of downhill, what is your least favorite episode of this block? What's your nadir?
My nadir was episode 22, Sakuya's Secret. This is the episode where Sasami reveals her friendship with Yugi, causing Ayaka to fortify the house, which is quite funny because, among other things, it keeps Nobuyuki out of his own house. And Ayaka's traps get more and more elaborate to the point where the house is covered in razor wire and has, like, battleship turrets sticking out of the top of it.
Turrets. And Nobuyuki just keeps getting blown up by different things. It's
yeah,
a good extended joke.
Yeah, but the other thing that happens in this episode, and its primary focus, is that this is the point where Sakuya and Tenchi are dating, and he just starts asking about her parents and her past and her home, and she realizes she doesn't remember even having one. And, like, the thing about this show is, for the most part, it does a pretty good job of foreshadowing stuff, and, like, there isn't a lot in this show that, for a Tenchi show, feels completely unnatural. Like, most of the character interactions feel pretty natural. Most of the plot progression makes sense. But in this case, Tenchi's just, like, badgering Sakuya about her past when she clearly doesn't want to talk about it, and it just feels really forced in a way that most of the rest of the show doesn't. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, we have to reveal that Sakuya is not a person at some point, so now Tenchi's gonna just fucking badger her about it.
Was that the voice actor? Was that the writing?
I think it's the writing, really.
Okay.
Because it really is. It's like, oh, Sakuya, you never tell me about your parents. And she's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Let's go get ice cream. And then, you know, the next scene, oh, Sakuya, you never tell me about what your childhood was like. It's like three in a row.
Sounds like that almost sounds like a kind of fairy, not a fairy tale, but like a... like, oh my, what big teeth you have.
Yeah,
grandma.
Right, like a fable. Like, Sakuya, what? And I appreciate that, you know, Sakuya realizing that she doesn't remember anything pre-Tenchi is terrified.
Yeah,
but
right.
it just feels clumsy compared to everything else, and it's kind of disappointing. What about you? I see in the notes that you don't really have a nadir.
That's right. Which doesn't mean that this is the best show in the universe, but I just found it really hard to pick a least favorite episode.
Yeah.
Because across the board on this block, like, every episode has enough of something for me to, like, count it to be decent.
Right, yeah.
You know, part of that is the benefit of it being, like, a really wacky, fun Japanese show that's just, like, crazy, which is something I like a lot. But if I had to pick something, I could nitpick a little bit about the very ending of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I thought the conflict with between Tenchi and Yugi, the final confrontation there, may have felt a little rushed. I didn't want it to be, like, a big fight. I actually kind of like that it wasn't, but I don't know. He kind of just, like, walks up to her. She's scared and, like, throwing energy at him and stuff, and is like, oh, don't put me back in the box, god no. He, you know, slaps her because she's going crazy, I guess, and that's what that's what you do as a cliche.
Yeah, right.
And
slaps
and hugs
back
her
into
and, yeah, right, and then hugs her and brings her back to reality and kind of invites her over. And I kind of wished it was had, like, its own little, it was more of like a conflict there where it's like maybe he's trying to fight her and struggling and he can't, he's no good at fighting, or like she's just way too powerful and he doesn't, you know. I wanted, like, more of a arc to the final confrontation.
Yeah,
where Tenchi, like, realizes she's troubled, where which he didn't seem to, he seemed to just kind of, like, know offhand or be able to tell in the original.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I kind of preferred if, like, maybe it kind of revealed itself through this battle where he's losing, and then but she's freaking out and saying stuff like, don't
right.
put me back in the box.
Right, rather,
like,
than
that he,
from
rather
her,
than
like,
just
saying
knowing.
It to Sasami, basically, in front
yeah,
of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of how it's played out there. Yeah,
it
that would have
been a little flashier, because it did seem like it ended pretty abruptly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But, you know, besides that, also, Sakuya, I kind of wanted maybe a little more acknowledgement of Sakuya's disappearance after that, like, after she disappears when she sacrifices herself to break the dream thing. I don't know. I don't hate how that was handled at all, but I kind of would have liked a little more.
Yeah, I have some complicated feelings about Sakuya personally.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think we should probably take a break, and then when we get back from that, we should talk about those feelings and what we thought about the show overall.
Who cares? I laugh at heartache. Ha ha ha!
Tenchi in Tokyo will return in a moment. Hey, this is Michael, just jumping in during the break for some acknowledgements. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving by Onatech, and you can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode, where we cover Cartoon Roulette, will be up on April 11th, and next week will be our 6th minisode. As always, you can submit a topic suggestion for our minisodes via DM on facebook.com/hppod, Twitter @hppod, or you can email us at hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
Stay out of this. We'll decide who you like best.
And now, back to Tenchi in Tokyo.
So, back from our break, and let's talk about what we thought about this show overall.
Yeah.
So I did tease that I have some complicated thoughts about Sakuya, but before I really get into those, I really liked this block of this show. I accidentally spoiled that Tenchi tells everyone to get lost, and they do. I was looking forward to that, and it pretty much met my expectations. Like, it worked out about how I would want it to. I think that the characterization of Yugi really worked. in a way that it hasn't for previous Tenchi series villains. And the final confrontation with Tenchi is just pretty well done. Like, it's genuinely quite sad, actually.
Yeah.
The foreshadowing, for the most part, works really well. Actually, this is, I think, the first time that I really liked Tenchi as a character. They do a lot with him in this block that they had never really done before. I mean, just forcing him to make decisions, which often there's no good decision to be made, is something that I talk about a lot on this show. And
whereas before,
it works
before,
really well.
Before, for sure, he was like indecisive, and that was fine. And it was like kind of annoying. And now it's
right.
Like, no, you have to choose now, and it's actually stressful.
Yeah, right. And of course, the whole dream sequence thing is pretty crazy to put a character who the greatest adversity that he's faced is, you know, just some crazy evil overlord kind of guy. The one thing that did bother me about this is that Tenchi tells Yugi, oh, you can come stay with us. And then they put her in stasis in a cave, which is basically exactly what she feared most.
They did make it sound like she, like, agreed to do that.
Well, that's true.
And also that it's something to do, you know, they make up some reason where it's like, well, she's in our dimension for too long or not used
to
our dimension.
Yeah, right.
So
there's some
grow in there
behind it.
And also they want her to grow into a better person. It's like,
right.
Okay.
And I don't hate that, but it's just weird to me because, you know, this is the last episode of the series. Like, why couldn't she just be hanging out with Sasami? Like,
why did they do that?
I don't understand why her fate has to be kind of shitty. Like, I expected the last scenes of the show to be her hanging out with Sasami and feeling good. And then it's like, now we'll just put you in a fucking cave. Sorry.
I wonder if they, like, maybe in some part of them, they're like, maybe we'll do a sequel series to this.
And yeah.
Be really confusing.
Yeah, right. What did you think about this block?
I was impressed with how the show concluded. And given the first block of episodes, I was not convinced that, rather, I was convinced that the show would have a more boring reveal and ending, like just some kind of like pretty stupid expected reveal. And I thought the villain was going to be totally bland because all she did for the first block was giggle.
Yeah, for the most part, like giggle and talk shit about how cool she was.
And then instead, like, we get a sympathetic villain, and her dark backstory was, like, really cool and kind of chilling.
Yeah, and well done. Like,
yeah. I kind of like how Sakuya turned out in some ways. Like, Sakuya's weird, because how she disappears from the show, I don't know, it feels convenient.
Yeah, also, it's totally convenient. It is totally convenient.
I'm also kind of glad it happened, as opposed to the, I thought when they were trapped in a dream together that some bullshit was going to happen where, like, because we're in love so much, the power of our love is going to free us from this dream.
Right.
And Sakuya will be human with everyone else.
Yeah, it's one of those
which
weird...
is shit that happens in anime all the time.
Yeah, right,
that drives
me
insane. Like, the power of love won because it's magic.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things where... It kind of sucks that she just disappears, but at the same time... her not disappearing is sort of a cop-out. You know, it's convenient, but it's also pretty dumb if she's just back.
I think that's why I wanted more of a reaction to her disappearance after the fact.
Yeah.
And more of kind of like a little sadness there, a little bittersweet kind of feelings from Tenchi, maybe, for the latter half of the episode when they're, you know, do the little time skip ahead where they're all kind of bonding and talking about shit.
Yeah, they're all back to normal, basically.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, let's talk about this series overall.
Sure.
I really liked this show, actually. Considering that I was actively dreading watching it based on reviews, I think that this is probably my favorite Tenchi show, actually. Like, it is quite a bit better than Universe, in my estimation. And it's been quite a while since we watched the OVAs, but even those, like, I think I prefer this for a variety of reasons. Like, as we've said, you know, over and over at this point, sympathetic villain is right up my alley. Particularly a sympathetic villain who's there from the beginning of the show. Like, Yugi's presence is felt through the whole show. Unlike, say, Kagato, she doesn't just show up out of nowhere and it's like, this is the big villain. And then she's redeemed in the end as well. Like, she's not even defeated, really. I like that stuff a lot.
I agree. I think the villains for both Tenchi Universe and Tenchi Muyo were kind of, they're just kind of one-dimensional villains. It's just like, they want to take over. They've got evil plans, and they pretty much just serve as a way to make Tenchi look cool by defeating them.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
defeating them in combat.
Right. No, you're right. Kagato is basically there so that Tenchi has someone to fight, and it's kind of neat. I'd never really thought about it like that. Of course, also, like, forcing Tenchi to make decisions is great. You made a comment at one point, Tenchi must suffer, in reference to the O'Brien episodes of Deep Space Nine. And, yeah, like, even before he's making those, you know, choices, there's a lot of stuff in the beginning of the show that he actually, like, goes through some shit, which is something that, again, I feel like they didn't really do before this point.
Yeah.
I think that, as I said with my favorite episode, the emphasis on the relationship between the women and each other, as opposed to them and Tenchi, was really nice to see. Like, just in general, I feel like splitting the cast up gave them stuff to do that didn't involve Tenchi, and they have entire storylines where he's not present and not a huge factor.
Yeah.
So they have, like, some existence outside of him, which is nice. I think that really my favorite thing about this show is I honestly think it's a deconstruction of the harem genre or the friends genre. Because there's so much about it that is just, like, this examination of what would this actually be like? What would the actual effect of this situation be? And one of the main ones is, like, you know, in Tenchi Universe, pretty much the worst thing that happens as a result of Tenchi living with six people in his house that are all more or less in love with him and jealous of each other is, like, he might stumble into the women's bath and it's embarrassing, you know, or Ayaka and Ryoko argue. But in this show, those arguments destroy the house because they have superpowers. Like, in this show, nobody can pay rent.
And they kind of kick everything up a notch in that sense. Partly because the show seems to be so much more willing to be wacky, which I found, like, relative to Tenchi Universe, which had its bizarre moments, but seemed strangely to be a bit more grounded. It's hard to say about a show where they travel through space and there's a cat rabbit that turns into a spaceship, but trust me on this one. Like, just, like, I guess how they show certain things, like the fights coming out, like when, Ryoko and Ayaka fighting. In this case, they really just, like, exaggerate it to cartoonish, almost, like, Looney Tunish extents sometimes, and it's great.
Yeah, but, like, the whole living situation of Tenchi, it's interesting because it's like, what, you know, well, what kind of impact would this have on his social life, for example? It would be impossible to date in this situation. That's what the whole show is about, to an extent. It's about the inconvenience of the, like, quote-unquote harem setup. The women literally steal money from Nobuyuki. He's tied up repeatedly. One of the last scenes of the show is them torturing him for information. Like, they just... I love that kind of examination of a trope, I guess. And furthermore, the separation of everybody from Tenshi and from each other, as I said, like, it gives them a life outside of him, which basically none of them had prior to this show in the franchise.
Yeah.
Like, everyone basically was always around Tenshi, and he was the focus of everything. And, you know, in universe, the most time anyone spends apart from him as far as screen time is basically the end of the show where everyone split up and then they all come back, like, immediately.
Yeah.
There's no actual distance, so we don't ever get to see these characters kind of in their own element. And again, that emphasizes the relationship between them as opposed to their relationship to Tenshi, which, as I said, I really liked. But the thing about Sakuya is that she is basically the, like, ideal wish fulfillment girl that these shows basically have all of their female cast as. And she doesn't even fucking exist. Like, she has life outside of Tenshi, just like fucking Ayaka in Tenshi Universe. But that's because she doesn't exist. Like, she, of course she doesn't. She exists only for Tenshi. That's the thing, then that's the reason I have complicated feelings about Sakuya, because on one hand, I wish that, I mean, on one hand, she's a paper-thin character. There's pretty much nothing to her, actually. Her personality is cute girl. Like, there's not much to her. But at the same time, like, that's kind of the point, that she's not a character. She's just a fantasy.
And that kind of awareness of it is pretty cool. Like, that kind
right.
of... Right. If they even intended that. I mean, even if they didn't, it's like...
Well, yeah, it's possible that they didn't.
Reading it that way is pretty neat.
But and, you know, to be fair, I might be trying to convince myself that this show has some non-wish fulfillment aspect, so I can feel better about liking it a lot. But...
No, I think you're right, because there's more to that with Tenshi also.
Yeah, right.
One thing I liked about this too is at the end, Tenshi's grandpa is like talking about how they're Earth Guardians, their family, and how Tenshi's strength isn't in fighting, but is just in like his kind of natural, inexplicable charisma since he's so
fucking
boring.
I mean, specifically they say, you know, his like gentle nature is his strength.
Yeah. And they even go so far as to not have him fight at the end. Which I thought was pretty cool. I could see where people would be like a little disappointed wanting some big ass final battle with Tenshi and his dumb sword. But I personally really like that as a character aspect of Tenshi. Like, his strength is in his like you said, his gentle nature and his kind of pacifist.
Well, yeah, and like
willing
his...
to like bring people in and befriend them and learn about them instead of just destroying them.
And in his kind of emotional, like, openness as well. I mean, he's pretty straightforward with everyone through pretty much the whole show.
Yeah.
And also, it's nice that, I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but it's also nice to me that they say this about Tenshi, but we've been seeing it through the whole show, because his classmates, aside from Sakuya, also really like him, to the point there's an episode where Yugi has a monster constantly throwing Amagasaki across town because he's just so jazzed to tell Tenshi about everything that happens to him, and he keeps interrupting Tenshi's time with Sakuya. Like, you know, it again, it's been kind of foreshadowed. It's not just they say it, so it must be.
And that's a difference from the other series, too, just in terms of, like, not having Tenshi just all of a sudden become a cool warrior at the end, where it's like, in the other ones, it's like, okay, Tenshi got the sword, and now he's really good at combat, and he's gonna fight the last boss. What? Huh? Like, no. He's fairly bland. They foreshadow a little, I think, in the universe that he can fight, sort of.
Yeah, but, I mean, he trains with Katsuhito and stuff, but
it's still just seems kind of out of nowhere, especially considering his nature, that, you know, all of a sudden, and that's, that shit strikes me the most as wish fulfillment.
It's yeah,
where
no.
The main male character has got to be like a badass warrior in the end, right?
Right, right.
And this one, they're like, let's subvert that a little bit, maybe. I mean, I don't know if that was their intent, but like, let's just say no.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the whole thing is, you know, we've been saying harem with air quotes this whole time, and like, in general, the genre exists for wish fulfillment. Like, yeah. Come on, that's, you know, Tenshi being embarrassed because he walks into the ladies' bathroom, that's wish fulfillment. It's like,
right.
Oh, God, oh,
see
no.
Some boobs.
Yeah, right. Of course, Tenshi's embarrassed because he's the character, but you're supposed to put yourself in his place, and the show's kind of nudging you like, oh, it wouldn't be that bad. Like,
right, yeah.
And, you know, you have a good point, too, about being, like, the badass hero. The whole genre is wish fulfillment, and I feel like this show is just sort of taking a really different approach to it, and I appreciate that. Like, I honestly think it's a deconstruction of, like, wish fulfillment in the harem genre, because most of it's about how it would fucking suck to live this life. Like, Tenshi leaves because he's so fed up with these people, and then they build a portal into his bed. Without asking, they just do it. And it's like, oh, well, can't get rid of it.
I have to wonder if this, like, kind of overturning of this wish fulfillment thing is why a lot of people don't like the series as much as the others.
Yeah, I didn't want to speculate about that personally.
But I
mean, that thought definitely crossed my mind.
I don't want to call anyone who dislikes this show pathetic. You
yeah,
know? Like,
right. Yeah,
you don't
yeah,
like
yeah.
it because you just wish you were...
A badass.
I'm just saying maybe that's responsible for some of the consensus.
There's probably a bit of that, but I think part of it too is that this is just a pretty unorthodox Tenshi show. I mean, considering that Universe basically just followed the template of the OVA exactly and just made it longer, this one's quite a bit different. So I get the impression that people were expecting another kind of same setup, and then they got this show where they split up everybody and, like, send them off on their own adventures. Yeah. It's just very different.
And there is probably less combat overall in this show.
Oh,
certainly. Space combat.
I mean, the thing is, we're talking up the show, but I will say it is definitely not for everyone. Like, it is a very wacky show, and that's why I liked it. And these other things were like icing on the cake for me, for the most part. Like,
I
like the deconstructive aspects of it, but fundamentally, if you don't like the show being completely wacky and having these like crazy facial animations that totally, you know,
super
break,
style.
That break the character design aesthetic, then you're not going to like this show. Like, there's no way to get past that because that's so much of it.
And you know what's interesting is, like, I feel like this show had the most moments where both of us stopped and were like, hey, I remember this, like, which is weird because,
you know,
I specifically didn't remember watching Tenshi in Tokyo as a kid. Like, I thought I only watched Muyo, and then like seeing certain moments of this, I'm just like, oh shit, that's where that's from. That's the
right
that's the soap opera where the main characters kiss, and then a meteor comes down and blows up the planet.
I forgot.
And then it's just Ryoko
that.
Reacting and just being like, meteor, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's
that's
God,
the moment
that's
I remember
so good.
Specifically from my childhood, and I was like loving that.
Well, right, and it's interesting too because you said that this has less action. I'm not sure I agree. Like, there's a decent amount. I mean, Ryoko's whole fight with Hatsuba is basically just Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's quite a bit of that in the show.
That's true.
Which I think, you know, as we're...
hand to hand, I think.
Yeah, right. There's definitely less, like, space combat. It's more personal. But I think, actually, that's one of the reasons that this is the show that I remember most distinctly. Because I get the feeling that as a kid, I was, you know, interested in the action, not the, like, wacky. So this is the one that has quite a bit of action, for my estimation anyway. And it's the most like Dragon Ball Z in a lot of ways. I mean, there's so many like DBZ quips in this fucking show when they're fighting.
Some of them are so bad.
Yeah, and some of them are terrible. Like Ryoko saying, have a blast, and then shooting a blast at Hatsuma. Like, that's terrible.
Nice speech. If you like garbage, is one of the worst lines I've ever heard in my life.
Ryoko has a lot of kind of bad lines, which is unfortunate because I really like Ryoko as a character, but
she has saddled with some pretty terrible lines. Hearing that line, just being like, "Oh, what a sick burn!"
Yeah. Oh boy. So I guess we should probably rate this show. We'll use our usual scale, which is a visit, which is a show you'd recommend basically hands down to anyone, regardless of whether or not they've seen it. A revisit, which is a show that probably isn't quite as good, but if you've seen it before, you're likely to enjoy it the second time around. Or Left in the Past, which is a show that is neither of those things. It's probably going to tarnish your memory of something you enjoyed as a child.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this, Peter?
I'd recommend a visit, but I wouldn't say it's, like you said before, I wouldn't say it's for everybody. It's definitely got its own taste of humor and its own kind of crazy wackiness that some people might not have the patience for, or it just doesn't jive with their sense of humor. But to me, this is a recommendation. Like, I really love this when it just cuts into bizarre super deformed faces and stuff. It does it in such a way and with such like kind of crazy diversity of faces, like crazy all sorts of faces, like very quickly, and like weird looking shapes and shit. It's just like something about that is really fun and makes the show like really quick.
With its
humor, and so even if a joke doesn't work, it's still going and they're gonna get something else that'll get you laughing.
Yeah, right. There'll be another joke pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
And I like that stuff, too. Like, that's actually one of the things about anime that I find pretty enjoyable, at least from, like, a comedic perspective, is the willingness to totally change character design to fit the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's right up my alley, too. You know what? I'm gonna give this a visit, too. I really liked the show. I was pleasantly surprised. I was expecting it to be friggin' awful, and it came out being probably my favorite Tenshi show. And yeah, it's not for everybody, but you know, nothing is. So to give it a chance.
Ronin Warriors.
Yeah, Ronin Warriors is definitely for everyone.
So we should talk about the bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a bet, a simple, unlosable bet that
we lost somehow.
Is there going to be an episode where Sakuya does not appear? That was the bet. And I said there would be, and you said there would not be. And what happened was Sakuya was, I believe, in every episode except for the final episode.
Yep. Definitely in every one but the last one. So you won.
So in the very last one, like, it's like just after she's vanished as a character and the dream thing ended. And so the whole last episode is like the confrontation with Yugi and running up to Yugi and fighting the stupid ice things. And then, you know, all of the shit afterwards. And none of that really had Sakuya. They mentioned her, but they don't show her at all. So I won. Great.
Yeah. Good work.
because this just means
we have one
choice. Yeah. So in that we don't want to skip to Tom 2 stuff yet. I'm super excited to.
Oh, yeah, me too, man. G Gundam.
Okay. The fuck, man. It's happening soon.
Very soon.
So because of that, we have like one Tom 1 era thing left to pick. So I guess we're going to watch Beast Wars.
Yep.
Transformers Beast Wars.
I'm glad we said that simultaneously.
Yeah, the 3D, slightly worse looking than reboot Transformers show.
That I have heard is pretty good once you get past the animation.
I remember seeing an episode of that where the characters die and go to heaven.
I'm gonna be anticipating that one.
I know.
When we watch
it. I don't know
it.
Why or how that happened, but they die and they're in heaven. Like, and that's all it. Right. I think that was the end of the series. Don't quote me. Don't at me.
All right. Okay,
we'll find out.
Means that I have the interim thing, and much like you, I don't have a lot of choices. I'm going to give us a little more time to track down G-Force. We're going to do Cartoon Roulette, which was a bunch of different shows, mostly Hanna-Barbera animation, but there's like they showed the Fleischer Superman shorts as well, which is kind of crazy. But essentially, it was a bunch of different shows that they would just kind of randomly play to fill time. So you got stuff like Space Ghost and Birdman.
Nice.
That kind of stuff.
This
I expect it to be kind of crappy.
Crap. It'll be fun crap, at least.
Yeah, right. And come on, it's got the Superman Fleischer shorts, so those will probably be pretty good. At any rate, we'll be watching one episode of each of the shows that was on Cartoon Roulette, and that'll be 2 weeks from now.
Oh boy, we're gonna have to pick pretty carefully to find the finest.
the finest episodes of Space Ghost, indeed.
A very boring, stupid show.
I can't wait for that.
Let's hope everyone forgets that Tenchi GXP exists, and we'll just say this is the last Tenchi.
So, okay, but here's my theory. So, we dreaded Tenchi in Tokyo. Maybe Tenchi GXP is actually great.
No.
Yeah, no, I very much doubt that, but I'm going to hold on to that because that's the only way I'm going to be able to make it through it
like
when we actually get around to it.
It's like a deconstruction of a deconstruction of a harem anime.
Right. Well, until next week, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby until next week, and then I become someone else. Next week I'll be Space Ghost.
This is Hyperspace Broadcast. Be sure to revisit us next week. Yugi's fate of being locked away for eons all by herself is pretty terrible, but easy to avoid, especially if you follow us over at facebook.com/hbpod and Twitter @hbpod, where we post all of our episodes, as well as additional content related to what we've been watching. It's also a great way to get in contact with us, naturally. Of course, subscribing on iTunes is also a surefire way to stay up to date, and while you're there, consider leaving us a review. Or Yugi.
But they had it right, Dan. All you have to do for your intro is just say the name of the show. Sliders.
Maybe that's what they're saying at the end of the beginning of Tenchi Universe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. It's a spinoff. It's the only hint.
That actually makes sense. Each Tenchi series is like a parallel universe that...
You're
the
right.
Viewer is sliding between.